Blog Talk Radio.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah, I was about to say. I don't hear anything.
All righty. Welcome to another night of Staps. I am Amber, of course. And
this
with
is Ryan.
Me as co-host, I'm Ryan. All right. So tonight we are supposed to have a guest. His name is Paul Coffey from Texas. Let's see.
Pretty exciting.
Recently. Yeah. Before we get to that, though, we actually just did some evidence review. Was it Saturday night?
Yeah, we definitely spent a lot of time working on this evidence. Of course, you know, we had to do it twice because we lost it the first time, but we got it back, so that's good.
And we actually found more stuff than was there originally, huh?
Yes, and that's always a good thing. That's always a good thing. I think your high-powered, nice earphones we were using on Saturday definitely helped with that.
That's actually what I'm rocking tonight is my headset, so.
Yeah, and they definitely helped because we definitely caught some stuff that I didn't hear with my headphones. And I thought it did a pretty good job of listening to the EVPs, but obviously I missed some stuff. It was fun.
Oh, yeah.
that's one of the things that I actually enjoy doing is the evidence review, because you never know what's going to happen next. You know, it's like,
well that evidence review has gotten me really stoked to go up there this weekend, Saturday night.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
It's going to be a lot of fun. Definitely be a lot of fun. I've talked to the owner of the house, and she's excited about us coming out there. I talked to her today and have everything set up. We're good to go. You know, I gave her all the information about who's coming. She said everything's good. So now all we have to do is show up and collect evidence.
So who are we having out there besides obviously you and me?
It'll be Howie, Allie, Kathleen.
Did I hear that some of another team was going to be joining us?
I believe Dennis from CPR, Dennis from Full Spectrum Radio will be joining us, and Angel from The Exchange. So two people we've actually had on our show will be joining us at Bell Nemus on Saturday. So that's pretty exciting to have their expertise and their knowledge it'll just enhance the situation, I think, too, as well. You know. Never.
I'm excited.
Yeah, I've never. Yeah, we've always had good luck there. You know, and obviously you don't count on stuff happening when you go on investigations, you know. But we've always had good luck there, and we've had and it's a very welcoming place. Just not to give out too much information, however, but you know, it's a very welcoming place, and I think everybody.
Yeah, I'd rather not know any backstory or anything. I mean,
I'm not gonna do that. You know,
yeah.
I mean, like I said, a lot of people don't want to hear anything, but I'm not gonna do that. It's just a good place.
Don't.
It's a good house.
All I've heard is the EVPs and what I know from the evidence review with
honestly, there's not much history to the house.
Okay.
You know, nothing that's really, you know, it's not like Mount Vernon or Monticello, where it's just
or the exchange.
an exchange or in Rikers, wherever there's an abundance of information. So
yeah.
if you want information, you really got to dig deep. I had to drive all the way out to the Library of Virginia to find information on it. And looking through microfilm or the fish computer thing. Yeah, microfiche, I guess, whatever it's called.
I haven't. Are you talking about like the little slide thing?
Yeah, the slide thing. When you go way too far and you got to go back really fast.
Yeah. Like the old newspaper things you flip through,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, exactly. I felt like I was like an investigative reporter. You know how they used to do that on those old cop shows and stuff?
I actually used one of those years ago when I was at Chatham Hall. They had one in the library there. Yeah.
So you know what I'm talking
that
about?
That was a cool
thing. The big old pain in the butt.
Huh?
So you know what I'm talking about? It's a big old pain in the butt.
Yeah, I thought it was really cool.
I think my problem was I couldn't figure out how to load the film right, so it kept unspooling on the other side. So I had to like wind it back by hand. And I kept asking my librarians to come back and help me, and so pretty soon they almost kicked me out because they kept messing up. Yeah, so
fucking everything up.
I need parental guidance apparently when I go to the library.
Help! I need an adult.
I need to be accompanied by an adult when I go to the library.
Hello to our lovely listeners.
Hey, everybody.
Okay, looks like we have a 512 number. I believe that may be our guest, so I'm going to pull him on. Hello.
Hi.
Hi, is this Paul?
Yes, it is.
Hey,
hello.
Paul. How are you doing today?
Good evening. Pretty good, I'd have to say. Things have been looking up for me recently, so that's a positive thing.
That's always a good thing, man. How's it down there in Texas?
Well, today was sunny. Well, it was started off cloudy, but that kind of blew off about midday and probably got about 65 to 68 degrees here today.
Oh, man, that makes me jealous. It's like, man, it was in the 30s.
Well,
it was sunny here, though. It was sunny.
Yeah.
Barely.
Yeah. So, you know, it ramps up pretty quickly down here. And, you know, all summer long, by the middle of May, we're probably bouncing around 100 degrees down here. So.
Is that a dry heat down there, or is it humid?
It depends in where in Texas you're located, but like in the Houston area, it's very humid. But here in San Antonio, it's a bit drier. Yeah.
So you're in San Antonio?
Yes, I am.
Are you a big Spurs fan?
I watch them once in a while, and I kind of follow them. You know, I see what they're doing when I watch the news, but that's about it. I'm actually from New England, and I retired down here.
That's so I know all about. Sound like you have a Texas accent.
Right. Well, you know, I guess I could, you know, swing some Western accent towards you, but.
It's all good. It's all good.
Yeah. But I've been down here for about 4 years, retired, took an early retirement, and, you know, wanted to come to the warmer climate. And
I can't thank you for that. After going through, we're living in Richmond, and obviously being in New England, you probably have a lot more temperatures than we have, but I'm ready to visit Florida right now.
Right. Whereabouts are you guys located?
We're in Richmond.
Oh, Richmond, yeah.
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
Well, we're in Richmond, Virginia.
Yeah, I've been there once, I guess, when I was in the military.
Oh.
Going to Fort Eustis.
Okay, yeah, I know what that is.
Yeah, Williamsburg.
So you were in the military, which branch?
The Army.
Oh, well, thank you very much for your service.
Yeah.
For our country and everything. We really appreciate that, for sure.
Right. Well, you know, now that we've kind of segued into that area, it was when I went into the military is where I first saw, or the door to the paranormal swung wide open for me.
Really?
Yes. And, yeah, I was went to school, Fort Eustis, to be an aircraft electrician, and then they sent me to West Germany at the time, and they assigned me to a base, a small airfield in the middle, the heartland of West Germany at the time, back in 1980. And the thing of it was, you know, it was an original World War II base. Back to when the Nazis had it, and they had an airstrip that was like 5 miles long, believe it or not. But they flew the new jet aircraft out of there, you know, and they were testing it and so forth. So the airfield was that long; you could literally stand on the airstrip and look for 5 miles. It was clear, but the asphalt, they cut it down and turned it back into farmland. But at any rate, when I first arrived to this base, if I can go on with my story, I can tell you a very interesting story.
Mm-hmm.
When they picked me up at the train station and in a Jeep, Army Jeep, and, you know, bringing me to the base, and no sooner we get to the front gate of the base, and the first building is the police building, and all of this base was original World War II. Every building, not one bomb exploded and damaged any of them. And so the police station was intact. And so this is back in 1980, but, you know, we're pulling in the gate, and there was a carpenter on a ladder in front of the building. There was a sign on the side of the building as you drove in, and it said U.S. Army, you know, Dolan Barracks, Schwebetal, West Germany, U.S. Army, all that kind of thing. And it was like six feet wide. You know, it was the sign to, you know, the entrance, and it was on the police building, and it was six and a half feet wide and maybe 2.5 tall. And there was a German carpenter on each side of the sign, one on each side, with a ladder, on ladders. And as I pulled into the gate, they dropped a sign. And in back of the sign was the original eagle with the ball of claws and the slap sticker.
Oh, yeah.
which was in the building. And it just, you know, something just hit me. Why at this moment are they doing this? Now, in 1980, when back in 1945, they should have been chipping that thing out of the building, you know, instead of putting a sign over it. But
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely quite a time span. You know, they should have been with that sign long before 1980. That's for sure.
Right, but you know, to me, I was befuddled by it, but yet it was a sign of things to come for me.
Oh, like a harbinger.
Yep. And yes, it was a harbinger of sorts, and because there was a attached courtyard on the back of the police station that had no roof, but the walls were like 10 feet tall and made of masonry. The whole building was made of masonry, stucco, tile roof, typical building of Germany. And it had no windows or doors, which, you know, seemed kind of strange. But it is a police station, so we kind of wrote it off that they let prisoners out for a cigarette, you know. So, you know, yeah, today you would think that. But this building was original to World War II. And to the right was the driving path into the basement, and to the left was a walking path. And every time I walked by that area of the building, the temperature would drop 10 degrees, my hairs on my body would stand up, I felt dread in my stomach, totally unusual. I felt somebody was watching me from all angles. All of this would happen every time that I walked by on this path next to that courtyard.
So you felt like someone was following you?
No, it was somebody watching me, out of the trees. They were up in the trees, you know. I would look either way, and I was, I'm looking for something that is looking at me. But, you know, eventually there was a desk sergeant in the police station. He used to walk around base by himself, and he wore black clothes, and he had an ambulance on his neck, and he'd be carrying a black book, you know, and he'd be all by himself, you know, and we'd see him quite frequently on his off time. You'd see him walking around, and, you know, and so one day, I asked my friends, I said, hey, we saw him in the mess, the chow hall, you know, sitting there, and I'm like, hey, what about him? You know, and they're like, if I were you, I would just leave him alone because he's on another frequency, okay? So, but one day I had duty down there down by the police station, and he was on duty. And so when I walked in, I was going to use the men's room, and so I walked into the police station and, asked. But then I asked, I said, maybe this guy knows something. He it's kind of metaphysical. So I said, hey, Sarge, every time I get a crazy question, and he said, well, go ahead. No question's really crazy. What do you got?
Yeah.
And I said, he sounded like a regular guy. Mm-hmm. So I told him about what happens every time I walk by the police station. And he says, well, it should happen. You should experience that. And I'm like, say what? and he said, yes, you should feel that. I'm like, he says, do you want to know why? And I'm like, well, yeah, absolutely, yeah, sure. So he says, well, follow me, and we walked into the back of the police station and by the cells, and there was an exit to the courtyard, and he says, come on, step right out here. And as soon as I stepped out, he says, yeah, see all the bullet holes in the wall all the way around, thousands of bullet holes that were still there. And this is where they just brought people out and executed them right then and there.
Wow.
This was one of the beginnings of me being introduced to the paranormal. And also, it's quite the introduction, shall we speak.
Yeah.
It's only the beginning. Because we also had a helicopter crash, U.S. Army type, that was a Chinook CH-47 twin rotor, the big one, and it killed everybody on board, and there was five people on board. They made me the guard of that helicopter through the night because the FAA had to come in the morning to inspect the aircraft, but the other thing was that there were two dead bodies left in the cockpit, the pilot and co-pilot. They couldn't touch them because the FAA had to pull them out. So they appointed me as the guard I stood there, of course. The co-pilot was my officer in charge. So they gave me orders, shoot the kill, hurt the harm, anybody that came in the perimeter, and I said, yes, sir, mm-hmm. no problem. They're dead if they come anywhere near here.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so I stayed there into the night. I'm a proud, you know, soldier, you know, I'm going to take care of this, you know. And about midway into the evening, the moon got high enough that it came overhead where the rip in the trees were, where this helicopter came through.
Mm-hmm.
And I was in the woods all by myself, and there was a taped-off perimeter. And all of a sudden, it lit up the whole area, and I'm like, wow, this is going to be all right. You know, I was in pitch-black darkness. Now it's all lit up in here. I can live with this. I can see what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
But then all of a sudden, all five of these soldiers appeared in front of me. And they didn't have any legs, and they didn't have smiles on their faces either. And for about a minute, I looked at them, and I said, I think I need a cigarette. And I stepped outside of the perimeter, had a cigarette, and then, you know, said, I'm going to get my ass back in there. So I did. I went back in and guarded it. They weren't there when I got back, and I guarded the thing for the rest of the night. But that was another instance where I saw spirits. And then thirdly, back in my barracks room, which my barracks were original World War II as well.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, every year, one day a year, they would allow the German soldiers to come back, and they would kick us out, and they would have free ability to roam through the barracks and look at their rooms where they used to be and so forth. And, you know,
mm-hmm.
So at any rate, one night I'm in my bed, and I woke up about an hour and a half after I had fallen asleep, and I looked into my room, and I saw, and I had my own room. I was the only person in this room, and I saw the legs of a man in my room, and I'm like, oh my gosh, I see what seems to be the legs of a man in my room.
Yeah.
And I couldn't see the rest of it because there was a bunk. There was, you know, two bunks, one above me. So I had to bend down my head, and as I did, I saw, yes, it did have a midsection. And then I bent it down a little further, and I saw its head and two eyes, and they were looking at me.
Oh, my God.
And I was just bowled over at that point, and I'm like, oh, my God, I have a ghost here.
Was he dressed in a uniform, like a German uniform?
You know, he was in a uniform, and what didn't dawn on me right away, because I don't, you know, yeah, I know what a German uniform looks like. I know what an American uniform looks like, too. But this uniform, it did have a uniform on. I couldn't make out what kind it was. But yet, immediately I thought it was German, and I was wondering if he had one of those 15-inch bayonets, and he's going to stick it in me, you know? You know, yeah. So it was, you know, and I had to make a determination right then and there. I said, what am I going to do? Am I going to run down to the commander's office and say, hey, look, I got a ghost in my room, you know? You know, and rightly so, there was. There absolutely was, because it wasn't there just one night. It was there many nights that I checked, and I had plenty of, you know, I didn't use a camera to take a picture of it. I was, you know, befumbled, scared, I don't know. You know, I had a nice 35-millimeter camera as well, and I never took a picture of it. That, to me, is strange that I didn't, but I took a good hard look at it, and it was in 3D, an image of a man, and I looked real close that I could see particles floating around. And when I saw that, you know, the black image itself, it was darker, the image was darker at night, in my room. Mm-hmm. It was darker than the surroundings. And so it just stuck out, you know, the darker image stuck out in the darkness.
Yeah.
So it was pretty amazing indeed, you know. But anyways, that was my first introduction to the paranormal. And, you know, I did know as a child that I was a little something special. You know, I did know that I could feel people's energy. And it was a positive thing for me to be able to do that, because I could tell if somebody was getting pissed at me and which way they were going to come at me, and I would just go the opposite way. They would never get their hands on me.
For sure.
That's good information, yeah. So that's my beginning, you know, and an amazing story in itself. And then, you know, I had a career, raised a family, and I was very, you know, focused on that. I didn't want to go into the paranormal at that time for all those many years, over 20 years. But eventually when I retired, you know, after, you know, you sit home and watch Ghost Hunter and whatever, you know, other paranormal show, I said, you know, I saw a ghost years ago, and, you know, I'd like to replicate that. And so I had moved to San Antonio, Texas. I had met a woman, and, you know, and she's a healer. And so, you know, I explained to her what I wanted to do. I had, you know, she asked me. She said, well, what are you going to do? You know, you're retired. You know, how are you going to fill your spare time? That's a good question. You know, why don't I go ghost hunting? And sure enough, I joined a couple meetup groups.
Mm-hmm.
One of them was the San Antonio Ghost Hunters, and another one is Texas Ghostly Gatherings, and two groups. And it was a great thing that I could attend not only the one ghost hunting group's, you know, it was a meetup thing, so it was open. It was an open deal, and I would go to their investigations, and then, you know, when the other group had them, I would go to theirs as well. And I was doing them very frequently. But immediately, my abilities came forefront and visible, or, you know, I kind of, every investigation I did, I gained a little bit of knowledge, and I applied it to what I already knew. And, you know, my first five or six investigations, I captured two or three ghosts on camera. And
wow.
Yeah.
That's pretty good. That's pretty good right there. That's.
Yeah, it is. It is. But what I would do is, you know, a little secret,
just between you and me.
Okay, let's not tell the world. But I have the ability to sense spirit energy pretty clearly. Okay, I know what it feels like, and it's a big plus. It's a very big plus. You know, it's just like me walking by, let's say, an air conditioner, and you feel that cold in your body. Well, when I go by a spirit, it just radiates and towards me, and I can feel its energy, and so. Literally,
like
I go around and
like a little metal detector or something like that.
I'm like a K2 meter with legs.
There we go, human K2 meter.
Yeah,
that's your superpower.
Right. Right. So, you know, I'm able to sense spirit energy, and what I do is, and when I come up to one, I just ask them, "Can I take your picture?" And lo and behold, they let me, and I've captured some very interesting ghost pictures, full bodied apparitions, faces of spirits. I mean, you can clearly see them. And some of, you know, they're dead people. You know, they're not, you know, good looking.
Yeah.
They're not good looking. They're dead, you know. And some of them are scary looking as well. There was, I can go on and on. Right now, in the couple of years I've ghost hunted, I'm about at number 20 right now.
Mm. Wow.
number 20 is where I'm at. And I actually, you know, within the, say, the first year, year and a half is when I captured all of those. I am a spirit sensitive. I don't know if I mentioned mm-hmm. that. But, you know, that's what I call myself. Because of
spirit sensitive?
Physics.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm a sensitive. You know, and basically because of my ability and being able to interact with spirits. And another story I could segue into, but I will state right away that within the past year and a half, I filmed two episodes of my ghost story caught on camera.
Okay.
One was filmed in San Antonio. It was called Grumpy Old Men.
Uh-huh.
And then another one was filmed in Austin, Texas, at a nightclub pool hall called Buffalo Billiards. And the name of that episode was Side Pocket Spirits.
I got you.
And
Do you have your own team, or do you help other teams? If they call you and say, can you come with us on an investigation, or do you have your own team? Like you work with.
I am.
Specifically.
I am the team.
Okay, so you do it yourself.
Central Texas Paranormal is me.
Okay.
I interact with other ghost hunting groups, such as the ones I mentioned. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I've captured a lot of ghosts with them on their, ghost hunts that they've set up.
Yeah.
And there's been a few that, you know, I have set up that I've actually captured ghosts on as well. So basically that's how it happens for me. And I interact with the public directly. And mm-hmm. If people have problems, they contact me. And I will do what I can to help them. I am a spirit sensitive. I also can cross spirits over to the light. So I have that ability, and I do it on a regular basis. And that's just another story in itself with me. I can tell you that story if you wish.
When did you figure out, when did you know for sure that you had these abilities when you were younger? When did you know that?
At least with the energy thing, you know, being able to feel people's energy, I knew that right away. I also knew in my mind, although I'm a Catholic, you know, I was brought up that way, that we were taught that, you know, the only ghost that exists is the Holy Ghost, you know, in the Catholic faith, because everybody either goes to hell or purgatory or to heaven. So,
yeah.
But, you know, I knew living in these old tenements that my parents rented and that when I went to bed, there were spirits right there in my face. You know, I could kind of feel their energy, and I would pull the blanket up over my head, and that's the way I went to sleep almost every night. And I knew in my head that if I pulled that blanket down, that I would be seeing something I didn't want to see. But I carried on like that for years and grew up and, you know, never really had any interaction with spirits, except a couple of occasions. There was one occasion where I was in an old tenement house and my friends were playing in somebody's back hallway. They had an elevator that would allow people to move their furniture. It's an old turn-of-the-century home. And we were playing with that. We shouldn't have been. And in my ear, I heard, "Get out." You know, "Get out." And I said, you know, I didn't see anybody say that. And I'm getting the hell out of here. I'm getting out of here, you know. So I always assumed, you know, I never doubted that, you know, spirits, you know, I never doubted that they didn't exist.
Well,
it was always in my mind.
Face. I mean, it's quite hard not to doubt it. You know,
right.
when they're telling you, when someone's telling you get out, there's no one there saying it.
Yeah.
You know, that's pretty good evidence for me right there. I would.
Right. And,
sure.
You know, finally, you know, to end, you know, my childhood, I asked my mother. I said, you know, Mara, you know, what's up with ghosts? You know, is there such a thing? And she said, whatever you do, you respect them. Respect the dead. Do not mess with them. So, you know, that was her end answer to the whole thing. And so, therefore, I never, you know, I just carried on with life, and I never, you know, provoked or went looking for them. But I did, you know, I did know that there was something going on. And, you know, and I also got psychic messages on my whole life, you know, from a very early stage. And I would say, what a coincidence that is, you know, and just shrug it off.
Yeah.
Thinking that it was nothing, you know. Did that all my life. But then it became more apparent in my older, you know, as I got older, just things you couldn't shrug it off, you know, because it was just so coincidental. It was a sign, you know, more or less. So something was trying to tell me something, and therefore, you know, I decided to take a harder look at all this, and I did, and became pretty successful in my own right, you know, with what I found. And so, you know, and I'm glad to show the public what I have captured. And, you know, at this point in stage, I'm, you know, taking a break from ghost hunting a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to be going to some of these paracoms, you know, paranormal conferences, and be able to show some of my stuff. It's pretty amazing, some of it.
I bet. It sounds like it is. And I
it
like
is.
Your
it really
approach
is.
Of asking the spirits if you can take their picture. A lot of people just start flashing pictures, you know, even, and they don't get anything. But you have to be asking them politely. That's pretty cool. I like that.
Well, it goes beyond that, and it's very interesting. It's very interesting to hear the story, but, you know, it might have to be another time. But the two investigations that made it on TV, they were very interesting investigations. The one in San Antonio was an old 50s rental home, you know, three bedrooms and two baths, single first floor kind of place, run down, typical for the area. And the night we heard the story that the landlord told us, and it was an investment property. He rented it out, you know, to people. But he found out that by what people were telling him that the house was haunted. So he contacted our group director and of the San Antonio Ghost Hunters, and the story was that one of the stories, there was a family with, you know, husband and wife. They had a girl and a boy. The girl was 10 years old, and one night she was in the bathroom taking a tub, you know, and she was in there by herself, of course, and, you know, the door was left open into, you know, so that, you know, the mother could monitor what was going on. But the mother was in the kitchen, and all of a sudden she heard splashing, screaming, you know, and the water, you know, going everywhere. And she ran over to the bathroom, and the door was locked. And she called for her husband. He ran over, and he tried to open the door, couldn't, so he broke it down. And when he did, he saw that his daughter's head was under the water in the tub, and he went over immediately, pulled her up. And when she got her composure, he asked, well, what happened? And the girl said that a white-haired old man was holding my head under the water.
Hmm.
And that was the story that was given to us for this investigation. And the other thing, it's a longer story, but those people eventually moved out. They got out of that house. And then the owner said, the heck with it, I'm going to fix this up and flip it. So he brought in a contractor and they went in there, started cleaning the place up, doing construction, you know, cosmetics, and all of a sudden they just walked off the job and were never heard again, you know. So the guy said, I don't know what's going on with them. So he hired another friend, contractor, and he went in. But they were very religious people, and there were two painters, one guy would be in one room and the other would be in another, and so they had the place all taped off, they were spray painting the whole place. And so one of the painters took off and he went to get a pack of cigarettes down at the corner store, and the other one was still painting. And he heard his name being called, and he said, you know, what do you want? You know, I'm painting, you know. And then it happened again. And for a second time, and he said, oh, yeah, I'm painting. I can't stop. And then third time, the guy dropped his stop painting, and he started looking, and he didn't see his friend, so he stepped out the front of the house, and he was pulling up in his pickup truck, and he says, did you call my name? He said, no, I've been gone. I went out to get a pack of cigarettes. I'm just getting back. He says, we're getting the hell out of here. There's something in there. Just kept calling my name. Mm-hmm. And this thing's haunted, you know. So it was after that they contacted our group and had us come in. Mm-hmm. And what we did was brought in five investigators, and we also brought a well-known psychic that works with us. And she asked if she could be first, and we said absolutely yes. And she said, I don't even want to go in the house. I just want to walk from the front to the back and then back out. And she did. And she came out to us and said, there's a white-haired old man right there by that side door, and he just told me that he doesn't want you guys coming in. So therefore, I said to the rest of the group, I said, okay, that's our calling. Get your stuff. Let's go. So we then filed into the house, and as I walked into the house, I immediately felt the energy. And there was a bathroom off to the right of the doorway, and mm-hmm. I could feel the energy just like if the spirit was standing right there. So it kind of pulled it together that, yes, you know, what she's saying is probably true. But there was no furniture in this house, and they had just gotten done painting it. It looked pretty good. I mean, you know, it looked like it was ready for carpet, you know, and then mm-hmm. be renting it out again. But there was no furniture and nothing in there. And so one of the investigators turns to us and says, this place isn't haunted. It can't be haunted. There's no furniture here. This isn't going to be too much of an investigation, you know. And lo and behold, it turned into one of the most rememberable investigations of my life. Because as it turned out, these people, they were there. They were talking in the kitchen like they were in a restaurant or something, and they were putting their gear together. And there was a girl that showed up that was doing a book report in college, and she sat down on a five-gallon can of paint, and the director said to me, well, she's doing a book report. Can you please give her an interview, and, you know, and then that's it, you know. I said, yes, absolutely. So I told the girl about my, you know, beginnings in the paranormal, and I'm talking to her right there in the kitchen. Little did I know that spirits are listening to my conversation. And after I got done speaking with her for a couple minutes, I said, do you mind if I go now before these other people, you know, interfere with my investigation? And she said, no, go ahead. You know, I'm all set. And so I walked off, and I went into the area where I thought the ghost was. And there was a bathroom by the door that I walked in. And, you know, there was a bedroom, two bedrooms side by side in the back of the house. And so I poked my camera. I walked past the bathroom door to the right, and I poked my camera into the back bedroom. And just as I did, I heard some scuffling to my right side. And it turned out that there was a ghost right next to me.
Yeah.
And Yeah. This is no word of a lie. There was a spirit that had manifested right next to me. It was black. I couldn't. Mm-hmm. I could see its profile, but I could not make out any facial features. And for about 3 seconds, I'm holding my camera up as steady as I could be. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, I was saying to myself, I'm not going to get creeped out. I'm not going to get creeped out. I'm a ghost hunter. And then about the fourth one, I said, the heck with this. I'm creeped out. I'm getting out of here.
Yeah,
you know, so,
yeah, it's kind of hard not to get creeped out after all that happening. Sure.
Right. It was the unknown.
Yeah.
I had to prove to myself that it wasn't any of my associates.
Mm-hmm.
And this spirit did not say, hey, Paul, I'm here next to you. Did not say that. But so I turned towards the bathroom door, and I stuck my camera in there, and I didn't see anything, you know, with the infrared camera. And then I walked over to the next, you know, I walked out to back out to the kitchen. There's everybody still in the kitchen talking.
Mm-hmm.
They're all there, all accounted for. So I said, the heck with that. I'm not going back to see them. I'm going into the next room.
Mm-hmm.
And just as I did, I put my camera up into the room, checking it out with the infrared light, and
mm-hmm.
all of a sudden, a spirit said to me clearly, yeah, why didn't you just see that one? In other words,
wow.
It heard my conversation in the kitchen where
uh-huh.
I was stating to the girl I had seen a ghost. They were accommodating me by showing me a ghost in the other room.
Mm-hmm.
And then a woman spirit actually asks me, because they were trying to freak me out. They wanted me to scream. They were getting ready to be hilarious and laugh at me.
Wow, they were okay. I got you.
Yeah.
They wanted to scare you.
They wanted to. Right. So I went into the next bedroom and I captured the EVP as clear as day. Why didn't you just see that one? And,
mm-hmm.
you know, ultimately that was an amazing, it was one long sentence. It went, yeah. And then a few seconds went by and then it says, why didn't you just see that one? Clear as day. And I caught it on my video camera. But, you know, I went back that night and, you know, when I investigate, when I'm focused, I'm there to get a ghost. You know, everybody is, okay. So I take various cameras, you know, I use full spectrum cameras and I use a point and shoot camera, and that particular night I used a point and shoot camera and I took a shot into the bathroom that where I had felt the spirit was. And there was a mirror in the bathroom. As soon as you walked, you know, as you face the doorway, looking into the bathroom, you could see a bathroom mirror, and they had
mm-hmm.
it taped off. They had it taped off and papered off so they could spray paint. They had some soap on the mirror as well. So I just took a good shot, you know, of that mirror. I took many shots in the bathroom because I felt the energy was in there. So when I got home, I blew into the picture, and lo and behold, I had a picture of the man with the white hair and beard that they were talking about. I had a picture of a ghost. Yeah.
It looks like we actually have someone who wants to talk, so I'm going to go ahead and bring them on. I'm not sure who it is. So. All right.
Good enough.
Hello?
Oh, come on. It's me.
I'm sorry. It was a 331 number. I wasn't sure who it was. I'm sorry.
Yeah,
331
is the new 630, apparently. I don't know where that came from, but, yes, it's Matt from Full Spectrum on Wednesdays.
Alrighty.
Hey, buddy. How
we
you
have
doing?
Matt on.
What's going on, Chris? What's going on, Amber?
Hey, Matt.
Not much. We are
Paul.
Sitting here talking to Paul.
Matt, Paul, Matt.
Hi, Paul. Hi. How are you?
Pretty good.
So I was just listening to the story about the photo that you got.
Right.
And So what? The one thing I missed, I just got in from shoveling because we're in the depths of the Alaskan tundra right now. The one thing I did miss about that, though, is was there any correlation with anybody of that appearance in the location previously, or that's just
no, actually, no. Actually, it was actually the man that they were talking about, the man with the white hair and beard, and that was drowning the girl in the tub. And ultimately we talked to the neighbor next door, and she told us all about this man and that he had died. And he was a very bitter man. He hated children would, you know, constantly tell kids to get out from in front of his house. You know, he didn't want them playing around there or anything. So this was his name was Mr. Garza, and I went and did a search at the town hall, and in fact he had died back in the 90s or in this house. So he was an owner of the property, and his, you know, listed his wife's name. We actually got in contact with his family, and they saw the episode on TV, and, you know, they're very interested in speaking with us. And I think in the near future, we're going to be getting together with them. And however, the house, this particular house, eventually did get sold to somebody. The guy did offload it. And he wanted to, and but, you know, they knew it was haunted. It was very haunted. There was more than one spirit in the house. The EVPs we got out of there were incredible. There was not just only one spirit that we captured. We spoke to Mr. Garza. We got him on recorder, clear as day. We asked him, "Is your name Mr. Garza?" And he said, "Yes." it's on the TV
cool.
show. It's right on the TV show. And amazing amount of evidence we got out of there. And, you know, after what happened to me there that particular night, I was in shock. I was stunned that this happened. And I was still questioning myself. Did it actually happen? I mean, but I was stunned. I didn't want to speak to anybody. I just sat down on this little chair that I brought, and because there was no furniture in the house, and so I'm sitting there, and all of a sudden I just opened up to everybody. They were all around me, and I said, "I just saw a ghost." And they're like, "Where?" And I'm like, "In the back room." And they're like, "You're kidding." And I'm like, "No, I'm not kidding you. It's real." And, you know, but the evidence we captured, it all surrounds, it all validates everything. And as I said, I ended up capturing a ghost's picture in the mirror, and it turned out to be Mr. Garza. And just a totally amazing, investigation, it taught me something right away, that you always have to be ready, you know, no matter what. You know, something can pop at any given moment. And you have to be ready for that. So,
spirits don't
anyway.
Don't have a time schedule. They can show up wherever they want, you know.
Right. It may happen anytime.
What was the name of the episode that you said the San Antonio one?
You can buy it on Amazon Movies, and it's episode number 59, and it's season 5. So it's season 5, episode 59, and the name of it is Grumpy Old Men.
I'm definitely going to check that out for sure.
I had no part in naming this investigation. They show a lot of the evidence that we captured, and it was a tremendous amount. I mean, they had a lot that they could use, you know, and
yeah.
but they put it together the way they want, you know, and that's the end of it, you know, so you have no control.
Oh, yeah. I do have a quick question, and so you said the 90s, which I'm assuming you're talking about the 1990s, not the 1890s.
Right.
With the home being sold and new tenants in the place, whether they're renting or they purchased or whatever, have you contacted them to see if there's anything that's currently going on with the new people?
I went by there. They sold it, but nobody's moved into it yet. We were going to hook up an investigation, and just as we were going to do that, the guy that he had sold it, or he was in the process of passing the papers on it, and so ultimately it's still there. It's empty. Nobody's in it right now. The tenants that were in it, they lived there for about 6 months, and then they moved on. So at any rate, that's where it's at.
Well, the only reason I ask is there's a place in Aurora, Illinois, that kind of a hop, skip, and a jump from where I live.
Yeah.
That was the sole reason that I got into the paranormal was because of this house. And the current tenants had left. They moved out of state. And there's a Latino family that lives in there now.
Right.
They have crucifixes everywhere.
Yeah.
And they, I guess stuff has gotten much worse since they moved in.
Right.
But I did reach out to these people and say, hey, you know, if it's something you want, I can come in and check it out. I can't solve your problem, but I can give you answers on why everything
right.
is so upset.
Right.
Mm-hmm. If they'll talk to me.
Yeah.
Oh, they feel that I'm, like, if I come in and I communicate with them, it's going to make stuff much worse. So
right.
I understand
yeah.
that. But,
yeah.
I didn't know if after the current tenants that you went in had left and you had done any sort of follow-up investigation or
well,
any...
you know, here it is. I am a spirit sensitive myself, and I do clear. I know how to cross spirits over. So we were planning on taking another look just recently, and when we found out it was sold, and when we were going back in there, I was going to clear the place, but it didn't happen. So, so ultimately that's where it stands. But there may be a day that I'll go down there myself and just stand outside and try and clear it from there. And see what happens. So, it served us, and we got a full, accounting of what's going on in there, and so we don't want anybody experiencing problems similar to what was going on there, because it was actually hurting the people. The husband, you'll see if you watch that episode, it states that the husband of the family actually had kidney failure, you know. But when mm-hmm. When he left the house permanently, it went away. He, his health came back. So, there's stuff that goes on that, it's unexplained, and there's many things that can go on in the spirit world. So, every day I cope with it, and learn things about it. That's all I can do. But I always live for my next investigation. So, as all ghost hunters do.
That's the cool thing about paranormal. You're always learning new stuff. It's never a never ending education when it comes to that kind of stuff, because you're always learning new things, which is really neat, you know.
Right. You know, so I always look for, you know, if there's a good venue, a good hunt, I'll go, you know, and see what happens.
Is there any location that you haven't been that you'd like to go check out?
Well, you know, I have found out that I don't have to go far. Most all of my ghosts that I've captured are right here around where I live, where I ghost hunt, right here where I live. I've done home investigations. I've investigated aircraft carriers. I've captured a ghost on an aircraft carrier. I've captured ghosts in home investigations. I've captured ghosts in nightclubs, on and on commercial buildings, all kinds of stuff like that. And ultimately, I have great success where I live, and but yet I do also, I've done some road trips. Last year we went to Pennhurst, Mayflower Hall.
Ooh.
And we experienced that, and we also went to Eastern State Penitentiary during the same time frame. We did both of those.
Same area.
Same area.
Mm-hmm.
So we did them, and then this year we're going to Waverly Hills Sanatorium in June.
Oh, I hate you so much.
that's my goodness.
That is the one place that I've been ready to kill to get into.
Yeah. Well, I was going to book a private investigation, and it was like they start to sell investigations for Waverly like the first week of January.
Mm-hmm.
And I called about the 5th of January, with money in hand,
mm-hmm.
to book, to set a date, and they told me every Sunday, which is the, weekend private investigation day, because Saturday is public, and so Sunday, all the Sundays were sold.
Wow.
So, yeah, that's 52 Sundays.
Jeez.
At $1,000 a pop. That was so
wild.
What?
Because you're not the only one to get to Waverly Hills.
Was that Rebecca or Paul was that Rebecca or Michelle that you talked to?
I don't know. It was a lady. I can't remember her name right now, but I think it was a Rebecca. I did call back. I had to check with my group, because now they definitely wanted to go, but we're gonna be doing a Saturday night public investigation. But the place is so big, and I asked how many people come to the public investigations, and they said typically at least 50. And I said, yeah, but what do? How's it structured? And they said, well, we break them up, so you'll never be in the way of other groups. And I'm like, well, I can live with that. I don't mind as long as that happens, So we're bringing 10 people, and, it's $100 a pop, and it's going to be from midnight till 8 a.m., midnight Saturday night to 8 a.m. Sunday morning, and on a Saturday. So we're looking forward to it. Just another bucket list investigation.
Yeah, that's definitely on my bucket list for sure.
Right.
So they get out there for sure.
Yeah. So, we went to Pennhurst last year, and honestly, it was cool. It was cool. Mayflower Hall. But all the other buildings are shut down, and they don't have public access to them because they don't have permits with the town. meeting the fire codes and whatnot, so they don't have an occupancy permit for those other buildings. So there's only two buildings that do have, and that's the administration building, which is being leased out by a company that does the horror Halloween deal for Pennhurst. So the whole building is a
haunted house type deal.
It's a haunted house. Yeah, the whole admin building, the main building, and it's in good shape. The building is, and then Mayflower Hall is in reasonably decent shape. But that's it. All the other buildings are, the roofs are collapsing in. There's trees going in. It's just a mess. Quaker Hall is right back. The tunnels, no, they're not all closed off. They're open. I mean, they're closed off to anybody trying to get into them. But there is access. You can get in them.
Uh-huh.
And those are, they open that up during Halloween as well, certain areas of those tunnels.
Uh-huh.
So, and those, they say, are pretty haunted. But, ultimately, the way I look at it, when you go to a venue that is ghost hunted so many times, the spirits, they're going to get used to the people coming ghost hunting,
Yeah.
I like it when you go into a place and it's never been ghost hunted, or very few times. You get more interaction,
Yeah.
That's what I feel, And as a spirit sensitive, literally, I've been into locations like, we have a hospital here in the area that started, it was shut down back 10 years ago, whatever. And it's a Yoakum Hospital here in Yoakum, Texas. And I went there when they first started ghost hunting, allowing ghost hunts. And I'll tell you, it was amazing that when I walked into the place, I was being... I say I was molested. I mean, there had to be like 30 spirits touching me at one time, letting me know that they were there. And I,
trying to get more attention. Yeah.
Letting you know they're there.
Yeah.
And have any of you ever been touched by a spirit that you can tell?
Yes.
Okay.
I have not.
Yeah. So, if you're able to do that, you may have some sensitivity to, feeling spirits, and it's a plus to be able to sense that, And, like I say, my summation is, I'd rather go to a haunt that hasn't been heavily ghost hunted because, you may have a better result. So
we actually have a house that we are investigating this weekend that only our group has investigated. It's an old plantation house, but whenever we go there, it's like we get all these EVPs. It's like crazy how many EVPs we get.
Is that right?
I think the spirits, no one's actually tried to communicate with them before, And as we are with equipment and stuff, and so they're like, oh shoot, these people are trying to talk to us. I'll talk to you. Yeah, sure. What's going on?
Yeah, but so do you guys. I'm assuming you use ghost boxes and all that, right?
We had a spirit box. I don't think we have one anymore. But most of the stuff we get, evidence we've caught has been during evidence review. We'll get EVPs. We caught a voice of an Indian chanting on one of our breaks. I left my recorder going in my pocket. I left it on by accident. I thought I cut it off, and we're walking down outside, and I hear this Indian chanting. What's that? We weren't doing that.
Yeah.
It's just.
Yeah.
But
see,
when
we investigate, we throw everything out there. We use practically every tool you can use.
Mm-hmm.
Short, we don't have a thermal camera, but we got everything else. you know, and but we use, what I started off early on was I learned how to douse, using dowsing rods.
Dowsing rods, okay.
And, you know, I had very good results using dowsing rods, but problem with dowsing rods is that if a spirit likes talking to you, or you're the first person to talk to in 150 years, and it wants to speak some more, it may follow you home because it could speak to you. And that's what I found out is a problem, you know, dowsing. But I literally could tell you how many spirits are at a location right away by dowsing. And I could talk to each, one of them if they would talk with me. And I would find out, I could find out things about them, you know, when they died, what's their name, all of that kind of thing. And so, I mean, you can, it's a big advantage, but there are possible circumstances that can arise from that. You know, as I said, these spirits, if they've been sitting there and they're very lonely, and they know they can talk with you, they may want to follow you home to talk to with you at home, you know, so, and that has happened with me. And so
when you leave a location, do you do like a protection prayer to try to say, hey, you stay here? You know, do you tell them not to follow you home when you leave a location, or you just hope for the best?
Well, you know, I actually, because I am a sensitive and because they know they can communicate with me, spirits just go right into me. And ultimately I end up, and they don't leave, they stay, and I literally have to take them home, and then I remove them when I get home. I've learned how to do that. But protection prayers for me aren't, they don't, the ones I was using, like going to talk to God or St. Michael or to any of them, nothing worked for me. And, however, recently I found out something that does work. And what I'm going to say is, and I think it might be a good thing for you guys to use, is you go up and you pray, you know, go up to God. You know, you should always go up to God and ask for his light. But you want to go and ask the Holy Spirit, the Holy Ghost, or the Holy Trilogy to fill your body with golden white light and to protect you. And also have St. Michael put a bubble of purple light around your aura to protect you as well. And it's always a good thing. That's, you do this before you go into any haunt. When you leave, you say, only spirits of the light can follow me. All others must stay. And do not follow me home. You know, you're not allowed. You have to stay here. And that's what you should do. But
where did you find this protection from? Where did you get this from?
Honestly, I'll tell you, you know, I'm being pretty honest and upfront.
Okay.
The Order of Exorcists.
Oh, okay.
Pretty solid.
That's pretty good information. It's a pretty good place to get that kind of information from, that's for sure.
Yes. You do have to keep your eyes open to learn about this stuff. And I try to, you know, I look everywhere and I keep my eyes open because I'm a little more advanced than most people. And, you know, what I go, you know, some of the stories I have to tell you are amazing. You know, I don't know how much time we got, but, you know, another time maybe I'll speak about the second filming of my
story. We can talk whatever
you
want to talk about. And we have to 11 o'clock, all so, right. I mean, if you want to tell a story, we'd love to hear it.
I'm all ears.
Well, all right. I'm going to tell you a story, and this is going to be very interesting. This is from me and being a spirit sensitive, okay?
Okay.
This is how I investigate. And I've told you that I do douse, and I do have the ability to sense spirits. And, you know, a little bit about how I go about things is, you know, I'm an investigator, so I pay attention to what I'm capturing. And I use dowsing techniques. I use ghost boxes, you know, and recorders.
Uh-huh.
I always record my ghost box sessions. And, you know, so I have numerous recorders. And so I'll be looking for EVPs. Or record my sessions, making sure that I have everything covered.
Yeah.
We did an investigation up in Austin, Texas, right in smack downtown in the nightclub district. You probably heard of the famous, you know, gin mills that play music and, you know, some of the best guitar players and, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Have come from Austin.
Yeah.
And, you know, so ultimately, you know, Stevie Ray Vaughan was one of them. And so there was a nightclub that our group up in Austin at the time, the name of the ghost hunting group, it's a meetup group, and it's probably the largest ghost hunting group in Texas. And I'm proud to say that in about the 3 years that we've been, you know, involved here in ghost hunting, we've evolved to almost like 360 members in the group, to which I'm a senior investigator. And so we had an investigation at this nightclub called Buffalo Billiards, and they have a few, it's a chain, but they only have like two or three of these nightclubs. One's in, I think, Washington, D.C., and that might be their headquarters. They may have one in Boston. They may have one in New York City, you know, in some major cities. But they have one in San Antonio, Texas. And the building, you know, the person that put on the ghost hunt, you know, they told us, okay, it's going to be, you know, $30 each, you know. There'll be 10 ghost hunters available, you know, to ghost hunt. It's in the nightclub. You know, we have to wait till it closes to investigate it, which is 2 o'clock in the morning. And the ghost hunt will go from 2 a.m. to 6 a.m., and then it's over. And the building itself was original to the first building being built in Austin. And this particular building was built in 1861. It was the first rooming house ever built in Austin. And, you know, over the years, back in the 1800s, it went from a rooming house. It was built in 1861. It went from being a rooming house to a bordello to a bar room to, you know, the typical flow of usage. But, you know, another thing that was mentioned, of course, today the owners of Buffalo Billiards purchased that building and reconditioned it. And when they did so, they bought the building next to it as well, and to make the place larger. And literally, the downstairs area could probably fit about 250 or 300 people easily.
That's right there.
Yeah, that's a big club, and you know, you get a lot of people drinking and bopping along. They're having a great time together down there, but. They have many pool tables and electronic games and all kinds of noisemakers, and, you know, it's just incredible. And then there's a second floor, and there's a bar right above the first floor, and it's, you know, it's not so well used, but it's a private lounge area where you can go up there. It's kind of more quiet, so you can have a beer and, you know, have quiet conversation with somebody. And then to the side of that is the additional building they purchased, and it's another big area where they have more pool tables and a huge bar. And you could fit probably another 250 people in that area as well. It's just that big. And but that area back in the day used to be a surgeon's office.
Oh.
And, yeah. So
that's a hotbed right there.
There you go. So, you know, you open your ears, you listen to what you hear that is supplied to you, and that information was supplied to me that it was on one side of the building was an original rooming house, the other side was a surgeon's office. Okay, good. And they asked me, do you want to go? I'm like, are you kidding me? Of course. This is music to my ears.
Oh, yeah.
And, yeah, you know, so I went, and it turned out that only the diehard investigators went, you know, some, and actually they're girls,
uh-huh.
And most of them, and so I was the only guy, and, you know, I was taking this investigation pretty serious, and with my senses, I felt that the spirits were all up on the second floor, and I said, okay, and we had to go up there anyway, because they were still cleaning up downstairs. And so we went up to the second floor, and we started taking pictures. And the very first night, between 2 a.m. and 6 a.m., you know, I captured all kinds of orbs that undeniably were spirit orbs, no question asked. You know, there's no doubt. And some, you know, some of these orbs had faces. You know, the bar manager himself, I have a picture of him with an orb in his face, and it lights up his whole face like a mist. You can barely make out his face, and it's an amazing picture. But,
wow.
But yeah, and I have this. I have all of this. I can you'll be able to see some of these investigations. I have them on YouTube. If you haven't seen them already,
I'll definitely check those out.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yes, and I'll tell you, you know, at the end. But the investigation went on, you know, the whole night where, you know, we were doing EVP sessions and breaking into groups to do that. You know, there's some
mm-hmm.
girls would get together to do that. I would walk around by myself, and all of a sudden I stood just into the old area where the surgeon's office was, and I stood in between two pool tables, and I said, well, I'm going to start doing what I do, and I'm going to ask. I'm going to ask the spirits to come and be with me and to allow me to talk to them, that I would not hurt or harm them,
mm-hmm.
and that I wanted to take a picture of them. So all of a sudden, a very cool, you know, I mean, there was air conditioning in the building, but it was shut down on this floor because they weren't using it. And all of a sudden, a big wafting cold came right towards me, and I could feel it coming to me. And I'm like, holy smoke. This, to me, feels like a spirit, and it's standing right in front of me. And it was trying to communicate with me.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I couldn't hear it, couldn't talk to it. So after about 5 minutes standing there, and it was there with me, I then walked back to my group, and I said, I can't believe this, but, you know, there was a spirit standing right in front of me here, up in this other area. And they said, well, all right, well, let's all get up there and see what we can get. You know, come on. You know, and so we all started walking around together up there, and we walked back to the back of the bar on the second floor, and we looked, or they were all chatting, the girls, you know, they were just
mm-hmm.
sort of a social thing. And I looked back, you know, we're on one end of the nightclub, one side, and I'm looking back into the rest of the floor, which is pretty wide open except for the pool tables, and I saw a person standing in the doorway that we came in from. And it looked like a person, but it was all gray. And there was a gray glow surrounding it. And so I said, my goodness, there's nobody else up here. Nobody else up here other than us. who the heck is that? So I sprayed up my camera and I took a shot of it. And I ended up capturing a full-bodied apparition of a woman. It's plain as clear as day. And probably one of the best ghosts I've ever seen. I'm not saying this because it's mine, but probably one of the best full-bodied apparitions I've ever seen on TV, period. And it had blonde hair. You could tell it had blonde hair. And it was kind of odd looking that its hair was blown to one side. Just a ghostly image. But you could see its face clearly, and its arms, and its body, and its legs, and just an amazing shot. And I submitted that to My Ghost Story, I submitted that investigation along with the house that we did. And they said, we want the house now. We want that investigation. I was befumbled. I'm like, but look, I got a full, beautiful, full-bodied apparition right here. Why aren't you saying you want to do this one first? You know, they're like, no, we want this one. And I'm like, okay, we'll hook it up, you know. And, but, you know, the story goes on. We filmed the first one, and then we filmed the second one. And went ahead. The first investigation I hooked up the filming of it with My Ghost Story, and so I allowed the director of the San Antonio Ghost Hunters to be the storyteller, and it only made sense. I wanted to replicate the investigation with the people, and so I went ahead and did that, and I was an investigator when they filmed it, and my wife ended up as an extra. She was the psychic that was in the filming. But at any rate, we filmed that. But my friend and director of the San Antonio Ghost House, he went to Hollywood to do the storyteller filming. And then they came to San Antonio and they shot the B-roll, they call it. And you know, and they finish up the video shooting of the story. They already had the evidence, so they had everything, you know, to put the whole thing together. But the second investigation, I wanted to be generous, and I was going to allow, or I wanted to allow the director of my second ghost hunting group, Texas Ghostly Gatherings, to be the storyteller for that investigation, and we submitted her interview to My Ghost Story, and they came back and said, Mr. Coffey, you know, if you don't come to film this here in Hollywood, we're not going to do it. And so they said, we don't want this woman. She's very pretty and everything else, but she seems kind of timid, so therefore, you know, we'd rather have you come and be filmed in this. And so I said, okay, well, I guess if that's the way it's going to be, that you're not going to film it otherwise, I guess I need to come. So I did. I went there and filmed it, and then came back, and they told me that they needed a couple of pictures or information about the location, that they wanted me to go to the Historical Society and look for it. So I did. And, you know, I went there first, and my wife had to go to Austin, and so she drove me up there. She had to go to a meeting, and I had 3 hours to kill. So I went to the Historical Society, got what I needed real quick, didn't take long. And then I went to the location, and I said to the guy, you know, the people, the manager, you know, can I come in and just get some pictures? And they said, oh, yeah, whatever you want. Go ahead, during the day. So I went up there, and I said, well, what the heck? I got a couple hours to kill. I may as well do a mini investigation. So I went ahead, and I made I was able to talk to the spirits using dowsing rods, and I found out their names. And then I used a ghost box, and they said their names. You know, Tom, Agent Emmett, you know, and a few other names. And then I said, you know, to validate all of what I did, I asked them to say my name as well, and they said my name on the ghost box. So, you know, it's very compelling evidence. But go ahead, what's your question?
Well, I was wondering, when you have dowsing rods, how do you figure out someone's name, or when you're or how do you know? I'm not really sure how dowsing
what
rods
do.
Work. To be honest with you, so I'm trying to learn.
Yeah. Well, what you should do is get yourself a pair of the wooden handle ones with the get the ones with the glow paint on them, and they're about maybe 12 to 15 inches long.
Okay.
And they cost $15, you know, so it's not a big expense.
Yeah.
The thing is that what you do is you take a pair of dowsing rods, and it's best to get some classes in using them. But if you can't, you know, you can start off using them right away.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just simply, you know, how I learned was from the director of San Antonio Ghost Hunters, you know, John Delgado, that he was a pretty good dowser, and so I learned from him right off the bat. And and then, you know, once I got up to speed on using them, I then was telling him, or I would, you know, we would team up together and we would do some investigating, that we learned more techniques with using them, that we could, you know, then find out their names and things like this. Now, with a pair of dowsing rods, what you do is, you ask you get your dowsing rods level, and you know, quiet them down so that they're right in front of you, and then you ask spirit to show you a yes, and the rods should either cross or they will open.
Okay.
But typically for me, they cross for a yes, and then they open up the opposite direction for a no. But that's not always the same for every person.
Mm-hmm.
But what you typically do is you take a pair of dowsing rods and you ask, show me a yes. And then when it shows you a yes response, then you say thank you. You always are courteous. And you'll say, every answer that you get, you should say thank you. Okay? And then show me a no, and it'll show you what a no looks like. So now you know yes and no when you're talking with these spirits. And you should do this every time you're at an investigation. You know, when you start using your dowsing rods, start off asking, show me a yes, show me a no. Are there spirits here that wish to communicate with us? Is a very good first question. And you'll either get a yes or a no. You know, sometimes they don't want to talk to you. They may give you a no. So, you know, all of this can occur. Maybe they'll cross the rods for a yes. You know, that's what I was experiencing. So, and from there, the next question is, how do you typically find out their names? Well, you know, you find out what a yes is and what a no is. And then you say, okay, to the spirit I am talking with, I wish to spell out your name. I wish you to tell me your name. And then ask, will you please tell me your name? And to spell it out with the use of the dowsing rods. And so what you do is you use the alphabet. And you go, does your name start with an A? No. You know, cross the rods when I get to the right letter. And so A, B, C, D, you know, so it crosses on a D. And then, you know, a lot of times, you know, you just repeat the process. Is your, you know, is your, is the next letter an O? If it says yes, then, you know, A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H, I, J, K, L, M, N. Is it an N? Yes. Is your name Dawn? Yes. You just figured out their name, how to address them. So you're building a rapport with spirits. And you could also ask them what year they were born. So you could say, were you born in the 1800s? Cross the rods if you were born in the 1800s.
That's interesting.
Yeah. Or were you born in the 1900s? Cross the rods. Or were you born in the year of 2000 and cross the rods? So you could typically find out when they were living on Earth. And then you could say, okay, every 10 years in the 1800s, it said it was lived in the 1800s. So you say, okay, what year did you die in the 1800s? Or did you die in the 1800s is another question. Once you narrowed it down to that, and if it crosses the rods, yes, then you say, did you die in 1810? No. 1820? No. 1830? Cross the rods when I get to the right year, the right 10 years. 1840, 1850, 1860, 1870? Yes, it crosses. So, it died in 1870, and it was 60, you know, you can ask how many years old it was, cross the rods, every 10 years. Were you 10 years old? Were you 20 years old? Were you 30 years old? It was 61 years old, let's say. So you can subtract from the year that you figured out minus 61, and then ask them directly, were you born in, you know, 1837 or something, you know, and, you know, figure it out that way and saves time.
So Paul, like, how much faith do you actually put into dowsing rods?
How much what?
How much faith do you actually put into dowsing rods?
Well, you know, I put a lot of faith. I don't, you know, I use dowsing rods, but currently I use a pendulum. And literally, you know, spirits don't have to be truthful to you. And they can be more deceptive than they can be truthful. So you always have to keep that in mind. So they'll deceive you quicker than tell you the truth. But one thing that they're not afraid of telling is how many spirits are there. And when I go into a location and I ask, and, you know, I communicate also with my spirit guides as well, and they work with me. And so therefore, you know, I talk with them, and they find out if the answers are true or not, you know. But I started off, I used the dowsing techniques very successfully to find out if the place was haunted or not, you know. And, you know, I could go into a building and just douse it and find out if there were any spirits in it. And if there was, then we're on. You know, we got spirits here. So, but then sometimes I would go into a building and ask, and they'd say, nope, no spirits are here. So I'd say, okay, well, we're not spending our time here. We're moving on. So until we find some spirits to communicate with, and that's what we would do. So
if I was dowsing, what would you classify yourself as what your abilities are?
Well,
psychic, medium, empath, what would that niche be?
I, you know, some people would say I'm an empath, you know, and I associate myself with some people that are mediums. And early on, I asked them, what should I call myself, if anything? What do you, you know, you seem like...
I personally don't associate with anything. I do not talk about it. I do not talk about it at all. I mean...
Yeah. But, you know, I asked people what they thought I should be or what I should call myself, and at the time they had said a spirit sensitive. You know, I have taken courses in psychic development. That was a plus for me, opening up your psychic pathways. And I've also, you know, since then, you know, my path has brought me to mediumship as well. And I have taken some mediumship courses. And when I took the courses,
Yeah. Paul, yeah. I need to cut this short, but I'm told that we need to wrap this up. Do you have anything happening, anything going on that you like, anything you'd like to promote before we let you go? Anything?
Well, I will just say this. I'll give you my YouTube channel.
Okay.
And you can look at some of the things I have up on there. Not all of my ghosts are up there. I'm still building videos. The ghost that I captured in the mirror is not up there yet.
Okay.
But that's to go on with the conversation. But I'm a little bit lazy building videos at this time. But there's many of my videos are up there, and you'll be totally impressed by what you see. So the channel is...
Okay, let's check it out.
Paranormal Paul, number one. So it's one
and
word.
And we also have someone on hold, so I'm gonna bring them on.
Okay. So
hello.
Hey.
I'm sorry. Hello. Did you want to give us that link again for your YouTube?
Yeah, the YouTube channel name that you want to look for is one word: Paranormal Paul, and the letter or the number one. So it's all one word. Paranormal Paul 1.
Alrighty.
Okay.
So if you pull that up, you'll see a number of investigations of mine and evidence reveals. And you'll probably see the bulk of the ghosts that I've captured.
We'll definitely check it out
besides,
for sure.
Yeah. Besides the ones that I did for TV, I actually did a follow-up investigation for the TV show, not for the show, but the people that owned the property of a TV show that was filmed called The Dead Files. And it was filmed in Cedar Park, Texas, and Amy Allen, the medium, said that the place was haunted as hell. And
yeah.
So they told her to get a paranormal investigator to take a look at the property to validate what Amy Allen had said. So they brought me out there, and they told me that I could run the investigation any way I wanted. And so I'm like, thank you, God.
Yes, sir. Like I said, we're about to cut this short. I really, really appreciate you coming on, and I'll definitely check out your YouTube channel for sure, and thank you very much for taking the time and talking with us, and we hope you have a great week, and thanks a lot for your time. Have a great night.
All right, you're welcome. Yep.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Oh. That was a fun conversation.
Oh, wait, did I hear it? Okay. Oh.
Hey, he has to get a kiss in.
I'm going back to that beer.
Kevin, what's going on, man?
Wow.
What?
Oh, did we lose Kevin? Or was that Ryan?
That, no? I mean, I'm still here.
Huh?
I thought, who came on?
Did I kill somebody?
I thought it was Hallie that came on, actually. It sounded like Hallie, but maybe I was wrong.
It was a 903 number. It might have been Casper.
Oh, yeah.
Casper was going to call in, so that
Kevin?
Might have been who was calling in.
Kevin?
I think we got...
Howard?
It says call draw. Oh, here it is. He's back. Okay. It said he dropped.
Hey,
so.
It's Kevin.
Okay,
hey,
you're
guys.
Back.
Hey, Kevin.
Okay.
Sorry, I missed most of your show. I just saw y'all discussing things in Facebook.
Yeah, I missed that whole conversation. I'm walking around talking to him, and I was like, and all of a sudden, I missed the whole Facebook conversation, so I didn't know what was going on with that.
So I had to go tonight.
Wow. Well, it was a
was there a discussion about dowsing rods?
Yes, there was a discussion about dowsing rods.
Oh. And what was discussed? I'd like to, you can just give me a synopsis of what was being discussed about
him. Well, he was saying he could figure out people's names and certain, like, all this information by using dowsing rods, and I was trying to figure out how, you could do that. That's
well,
the gist of the conversation was, well, from my point of view.
Yeah. My point of view on the whole dowsing rods, I even have some, right? And we toy around with them. You know, it's a cool thing to have, but in the scientific part of what we do, dowsing rods are useless as far as proving something's going on, right? Because they can be manipulated so easily by a human being.
Yeah. You could turn them any way you want to turn them.
Yeah. Oh,
yeah.
Yeah.
A lot of faith in the person who's using dowsing rod, you know.
Well,
so he bases his own investigation on dowsing rods? Nah, I'm sorry, dude. I don't know where you get that. That's not where the majority of the paranormal field is using to get their evidence.
It kind of caught me by surprise when he said he uses dowsing rods. And I thought dowsing rods were kind of like on the way out, like a thing of the past. Like not many people use those to investigate, or they use them. But
I didn't
like
know it was
cool
an investigation tool like that. That. Yeah, I didn't think it was really used as something.
It's not used for any kind of valid evidence. Anything you use with a dowsing rod, I mean, you can chalk it up as a personal experience and move on. You know,
it's like using a Ouija board because you can move the plant this wherever you want.
Yeah,
oh,
Ryan.
I don't like that word.
Ryan, you said a bad word, and I agree with Amber. No, that's like a terrible cuss word.
Yeah.
What, Ouija board?
Yeah.
Ah!
No.
Damn, I missed all the juicy stuff tonight. The one time I'm not at home during a radio show on the network, I missed a dude talking about dowsing rods. Damn it.
I'll wash my mouth. I'm gonna go wash my mouth.
Yeah, you better go get that soap, boy.
Yeah, man.
You know,
I was just trying to say, using the OB, a person can move that little corner thing wherever they want.
What are you talking? Are you talking about a Ouija board?
Yes. Well, yes, I am. It's like nails on a chalkboard.
So can I just say fuck and you together? Can I just do that? Fuck you.
Yeah, sure, Amber.
Okay. All right, that sounds good.
When and where?
Exactly. Place your mind.
Wow.
You know, all right. I do have one question to ask.
Uh-oh.
When and why what were the initial point of dowsing rods? What were they originally used for? There you go.
Underground water streams.
What, finding water?
Yeah.
Is that what we
said?
Yeah,
like underground streams or whatever.
I mean, I have a 3DS and on Coraline, I don't know if you saw that movie, she uses dowsing rods to find the well. Like.
There we go. So, yeah, Coraline got it right.
Yeah.
So, with that said, in paranormal investigation using dowsing rods to, if you're standing in a place, one location, or you're walking around and you're asking questions, who in the hell can actually put credibility when they cross other than, hey, well, maybe you're standing over a well.
Yeah. I mean, you could be you could be an underground water source where you're standing, maybe an underground river or something.
I mean, that could also be said.
Where was this gentleman from?
Texas.
Oh,
San Antonio.
Now, damn it, people.
Yes, asshole.
Why in the heck did somebody not text me and tell me that this dude was from Texas and was talking about dowsing rods when I am from the great state of Texas? And
he's actually from New England.
He retired
from
San Antonio.
Care. Well, if he's in Texas and he's being a moron, I damn sure need to be able to rip his ass.
Let me say something real quick. You can't say that you're going to rip his ass. You can't say that he's wrong, because nobody has
no.
a fucking answer.
Everybody has their own opinions, and that's where I stand. And I don't want to be rude to anyone.
Oh, I understand. I'm trying to be funny.
I mean, I have my personal beliefs, you have yours, and I'm not one to be, you know, rude to anyone or anything like that, so.
The only one you can be rude to is Matt.
Yes.
Yeah, fuck you, Matt.
Oh, with pleasure, yeah.
You're a fucking asshole, Matt.
And fuck you, too, and you're an asshole as well. But
because, see, Matt can be a douchebag a lot of the times, and see, he was born in Texas.
Yes,
I
was conceived, born, and raised in Texas.
Yeah, I come across people like Matt all the time. I call him douchebag.
That's probably why I'm such a douchebag.
A Texas-sized douchebag. There you go.
I love Matt.
Honestly, to Paul Coffey, not trying to discount anything that you're doing, and more power to you. Keep doing what you're doing.
Yeah.
Because nobody has the answer, and if that's what works for you, awesome.
Oh yeah. If that's what the dude does, then so be it.
Yeah, I mean, if it works for him, I mean, that
yeah.
Is,
see, thank you. Everybody has their own way of doing things. It's not
right. As
your,
long as he's not charging,
isn't necessarily the only
right.
fucking right way, man.
Exactly.
Well, there is no right or wrong way.
Yeah.
No. There's no guidebook, guys. I mean, you guys probably do
things
that we don't do, you know?
Yeah. Everyone has different ways of getting results. A lot
well,
of people don't
like
taunting,
oh, dear Lord,
but some people
I
do like
her
to
name.
Taunt, you know? It is what it is.
Yep.
Is it Jody, that's her name, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah, Jody. She does things a lot differently than I would.
Oh, yeah, I know.
Yeah.
Yep.
So, I mean,
yeah, but she gets results. Like we get results. It's just a different strokes.
It's all,
you know, when it comes to paranormal investigating, on a serious note, when it comes to paranormal investigating, everybody has their own way of doing things, and when they find that niche, that thing that they get results, you got to stick with it.
Yeah, that makes
sense. No offense to that guest. I was just kind of toying around a little bit. I didn't want to come off like I'm
He's trying to
I'm
yank
a
crank.
Asshole. Yeah.
My bad. I'm sorry. I'm in a mood. All right, we are actually closing it on the 5-minute mark.
Well, wrap your show up, girl. Do what you got to do. I'll shut up.
Ryan?
Well, I mean, we have an investigation coming up this weekend that we're pretty excited about. We'll bring in Dennis with us, Matt, on an investigation. So that should be fun.
Mm. That should be horrible.
we'll make the best of it. How about that? It'll be fun. We have heading out to the Palatine, so it should be a good time. It's new. You got anything coming up, Matt, that you'd like to discuss?
Nothing but little things here and there that are public events. But I do have to plug this, though.
Mm-hmm.
On my birthday, on March 23rd, I will be co-hosting a tour, bus tour with Ursula Bielski.
Oh, cool.
And, yeah, it's... And for what the cause is amazing. It's all the proceeds from the tour go to a family, which I don't know if I can say their name right now, but I'll find out and let you know on Wednesday. But the proceeds go to the family who had a daughter that was murdered.
Oh.
And it broke the bank trying to get her properly buried and for her her plot and everything else. So, it's all going to a good cause.
Well, that's great, man. That's so awesome.
More information awaits. I don't know if I can release everything until I talk to Ursula about it.
Well, it's understandable. You know, family would want their privacy. You know, make sure that they, you know, give you the okay before you, you know, give out too much information. I understand that for sure. You know,
I did post the information on CPR Map. As much information as I was given. I did post it on my page, so if you want to check that out.
Yeah, hey, Amber, just
feel free.
Thought of the chair.
Hey, y'all got 2 minutes. What the hell are you slacking for?
Oh, a minute and 30 seconds.
I want to thank our guest, Paul Coffey, for coming on and sharing his experiences with us. He's definitely had some interesting experiences, for sure, and I think we all learned a lot, and definitely an interesting conversation. What do you think, Amber?
I agree with that.
And we have...
Sorry, I've been not very talkative lately. Sorry, I've got a lot going on. So.
That's okay. Next time I'm going to bring a bottle of liquor for you, and then you'll be really talkative.
Okay. You got me.
We'll do shots. That'll bring out your show.
I heard bottle.
I gotta bring a bottle to do shots, though, so I'll just...
What are shots? What are these shots you speak of?
Whatever. We'll just drink out the bottle. Well, I don't want to dirty a shot glass. We'll just drink out the bottle. I want to thank CPR Matt for joining us and Casper for coming on.
Kevin.
And again, Kevin. Sorry. And I want to thank our listeners.
I got you.
On,
I got you. It's cool.
And
we're at 8 seconds.
Everyone
seven,
have a,
six,
everyone have
five,
a great night.
Three,
take care.
Two. And, okay.
Okay.
See, now you can shit talk. Not, Lee. No. This still goes into the archives, right?
Yes.
No, none of that.
So this is the after party?
What?
The VIP, I'm assuming the VIP lounge.
I've been singing to the bottom of this beer for a while now, and I've been waiting for a cigarette so bad.
What's the smoke?
You don't smoke.
We just blow smoke in my face. Whatever. I can deal. Is everybody still on with us, or just me and you? Matt?
No.
I'm still here.
Oh, okay.
Anybody who's called in.
All right, well, yeah. Well, last time we had a show, everyone just dropped off and the show ended.
Yeah, everybody just disappeared, so.
So I was like,
oh. God, my hips. Oh, I'm so old.
I got Amber a beer, so I was hoping that would make her help her talk more during the show. But I got to give her a six-pack
beer
to talk more. I didn't know I had the beer, and then I looked in the refrigerator.
Oh, well, that's okay.
So, also, since everybody's here, I'm sorry if I stepped on toes, but...
It's
yeah,
funny, because I know it's Amber City. We're at my office, and Amber City is my desk doing, you know, Facebook and everything. I'm walking around, so I have no idea that everyone's telling me to get them off the phone.
Why are you echoing real bad?
Well, Howie had just said, you know,
I was right next
off
to Amber,
15
she's on
minutes.
The phone.
That way we have 15 minutes left in the show to just talk about whatever, like to, you know, thank people and such, like.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it was definitely hard to get him to give me a chance to say, get a word in edgewise.
It wasn't just him. I mean, we've had it with other guests. Trying to get a word in, and they're talking over me, and I'm trying to ask them a legit question, and they're like, "Nope, I'm the guest, I'm talking."
Right.
I want to say something. Shut up for a second.
See, and that's why I'm going to do this right now, and Kevin are fans, just take over the shit.
At the same time.
Oh, I know. You just kind of you have to interject. I had to do that Sunday. You might end up talking over them a little bit, but once they realize that you're saying something, they stop. They go, "Oh, go ahead." You know. Mm-hmm. And
I finally had to do that. I'm like, "Look, we gotta go." Yeah.
As open of a person as I am. I am actually quite polite, and though I may curse constantly and whatnot, and I may be, you know, all out there in left fucking field, I'm still a very fucking polite person. If I ask you to shut the fuck up, you will hear a please behind it.
Right.
It's hard to forget what you've learned in like public, you know, to not interrupt people. It keeps going back to that. You know, I almost had to force myself. To say, hey, you know, we have to go.
Yeah, I had to do that with Matt's partner in crime last week when he called into my Tuesday show.
So Dennis.
Dennis started going on. Him and my guests were talking, and Dennis started talking about. Dennis was talking about gun control, and he wouldn't stop. And Jody was texting me going, "Oh, my God." And I was like, "Hold on. I'll get him to hush."
Yeah.
It's so cold.
Yeah.
It's freezing out here.
Dennis, if he gets a couple of cocktails in him and you start talking about anything political, just, you know, put the shit – pause. Just shoot him.
Amber's cold.
But
we've had many, many conversations.
Oh, I know.
To where, like, he'll call me and, "Oh, yeah, I saw Obama this," and I'm like, "Dude, just shut up now or I'm hanging up on you.
All right.
That's well, how they do it. No, it's cool. So how was your week? My week was good. How was yours? Well, Obama and gun control on a fucker, like, seriously.
I really hope we did not offend him. Like,
yeah, well, after, we were nice until we didn't listen to the conversation after you got off the phone.
Towards the end of it, you probably did offend him in a little bit.
I was trying not to.
Amber, not saying you, just in general, the way he was shut down was probably a little bit offensive, in my opinion. But
well, I mean, we were telling him, you know, we're trying to cut it soon, and went into another story. And
I tried to just
speak over him and say, hey, I hate to interrupt you, but we're running out of time, and if you got any websites or anything, go ahead and promote that now. You just have to interject.
Well,
his plight.
Well, I mean,
that's why I brought
you on and said, hey, can we get that URL again, you know?
Yeah, it was kind of more of the in a way, shit-talking about having him on while on air was still going. That's kind of what I'm referring to.
It'll be okay.
Well, you see how I kind of tried to steer that away? I did try.
I love how Kevin's just sitting back there laughing.
Because, you know, it is what it is. You can't really worry about it. Because
yeah, I know.
Majority of the people that come on these shows, they do so many that they'll forget it tomorrow. As long as you didn't call him an asshole on air or any of that kind of stuff, you know.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, we were respectful to him on air. I mean, when he was on.
And people know me, so. When I, you know, I even said, you know, if you're going to do what you're going to do, then do it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I kind of may have called him an asshole indirectly with the whole dowsing rod questioning thing.
Well, no, I mean...
you know I did. Come on.
With those 15 minutes that we had, I was going to try and bring up the Cecil Hotel from downtown Los Angeles. I don't know if you guys have heard about that.
No.
They just posted a picture January 30th. It looks like somebody is just chilled on the outside of the fucking window on a fourth floor. And since 1927, the focus of suicides, murders, mysteries, disappearances, and serial killers. Like, last year, 6 days short, actually, a girl from Canada, Elisa Lamb, was found at the bottom of the tank. Like, what happened in Blackwater, the girl was found dead in the tank on top of the building. Yeah. So, this girl had been in the bottom of the water tank for 19 days, people had been brushing their teeth, bathing in her water, drinking it, like...
Oh,
yeah.
Ew, God, that gets me the chills.
Yeah, and this is the hotel that, you know, Richard Ramirez fucking stayed in. What's his name? He was an Austrian fucking Jack something or other. He killed prostitutes. And then, like, in the 50s and 60s, it was known as a suicide hotspot. So, I don't know. That's what I was going to talk about, but now anybody listening after the show can hear about that.
That could be a different topic for a different show.
Yeah.
That's probably,
yeah. And for everybody listening in the archives, We don't condone people's beliefs and what they do or how they investigate. And Mr. Paul Coffey, we are sorry if we said anything offensive because we are not like that. So that's my disclaimer for the network.
Well, I'm actually linking him on our on the Paranormal Show site on Facebook. I've linked his YouTube channel if anyone is interested.
He has some good stories and a lot of good information. He just does things differently.
You know, when you get into discussions, it's kind of like politics. When you get a bunch of paranormal investigators together and you start talking techniques and this, that, and other, you're always going to have people that
disagree and get grumpy.
Disagree, you know. So we're all going to agree to disagree, and you know, happy hunting in the future, Mr. Paul. So there you go.
We appreciate you coming on the show and taking time to be with us and talk, giving your experiences and stuff too.
Shit, we are up to 151 likes. Before the show, we were below 100.
That's good. I hope people will also go like the URN Radio Network site because that's tied into all the hosts of all the networks.
Yeah, that is our that is actually our profile picture.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If you don't, it's because some of the shows don't have pages yet, and so if you go and you like the URN Radio Network page, all the hosts are administrators on that page, so they post their show stuff on there too. So if you want to keep up, we do have the Debunker Boys now on Saturday nights. They had their first show this past Saturday. And Chris Taylor, who did Paranormal Access Radio several months ago and stepped away, has decided to come back, and he starts airing not this Friday but next Friday. So we now have shows 7 days a week on the network.
What a douche.
Oh.
Huh? What'd you say, Matt?
What a douche. No, I love Chris.
Yeah. Chris has got a new co-host, and they debut February 28th. So 7 days a week, you can listen to a different type show every day of the week.
I think Adam would start listening. He's been listening since 9 o'clock, like since the very beginning. 331 is Matt. And then my phone is dying.
Yeah, I think we're gonna have to get off here.
Yeah, I'm at 10% now.
Oh, yeah, guys, if you get a chance next Tuesday, not this Tuesday, but next Tuesday, we will have Jay Wosley from Ghost Adventures on our show.
Oh, wow.
Okay. Nice.
Yeah, Jay's a good friend. Jay's a good friend of mine, and he is now featured on the Ghost Adventures show. So we'll be talking to him.
Someone I know is, like, his sister is Beth Brown.
Mm-hmm.
One of the founders of Asper, she's done work with Zach on Ghost Adventures. So maybe they know each other, who knows. She's actually just an author now and a tour guide at Shirley Plantation. So. Sorry, I interrupted you.
Nah, you're good. You're good. I just wanted to get that shameless plug out while I'm on air.
Yeah, and for my shameless plug, I'm going to throw out this Wednesday we have Al Shipley, who is a reference from Bruce Tango, Dave Tango's dad from Ghost Hunters. Well, Al wrote a book called The Case of the Unknown Woman, which was a woman who was pretty much about the turn of the century that was murdered, possibly. Speculation is out there by Jack the Ripper. Her throat was slit from ear to ear And there were people that came from all over the United States at that time to try and identify this woman. So he has a whole shit ton of information. And I read the book. The book is phenomenal. And it's very meticulous. So we'll be talking with him, Al Shipley, on Wednesday.
Sweet. Yeah, tomorrow on Terrify we have Sylvia Nance. Jody won't be with us. We will have Brad Kilmer, a.k.a. Mel Crystal Ball, as my special guest co-host. So there's no telling what he'll do.
Is Terrify the one that I popped in on?
Yes.
Okay.
that's me and Jody on Tuesday nights. But Jody is out of town, so Brad is stepping in her spot. And Matt knows Brad, so, yeah, there's no telling what can come out of his mouth. He's kind of like Jody.
Yeah, and I'll probably join this just to have fun.
Well, that's like, you never know what's going to come out of my mouth. You never know what's going in my mouth.
Oh.
I'm sorry, that was, that might have been a step too far.
Amber, you were a sweetheart. You were nowhere near where Jody and Brad are.
No. No.
If you try and compete with that, I'm sorry. You're gonna get shut down.
Well, I'm going to cut out, guys. Great show tonight. Keep up the good work. And people, go check out their page on Facebook. It's a freaking awesome paranormal show.
Yes, for sure.
You guys have a great night.
Thank you. You too.
All right.
You too, Kevin.
Thank you.